Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, our guest is Wisconsin's new Assembly Majority Leader, Scott Suter, a Republican from Abbotsford. The Republican tsunami on November 2nd swept Scott Walker into the governor's mansion and gave the grand old party solid majorities in both the state Senate and the state assembly. The daunting task ahead, fixing a projected budget deficit of about $3 billion and meeting the new governor's goal of creating 250,000 jobs. Where will the jobs come from? How will state tax policy be changed? And where will the cuts come from in state government? How will they affect the UW system, the contracts of public employees, the DNR, the State Stewardship Fund, and Badger Care? What about social issues? Will the new Republican majorities try to enact tougher restrictions on abortion? Will they try to curtail the embryonic stem cell research pioneered by UW-Madison? What about the domestic partnership registry for gay couples? And what about the impact of the cancellation of the high-speed rail system planned between Milwaukee and Madison as the federal government today announces that the $810 million coming to Wisconsin will instead go to other states? There's a lot to talk about, and we invite you to join the conversation. If you have a comment or a question for Assembly Majority Leader Scott Suter, please give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And Scott, thanks so much for joining us this
evening.
Nice
to be here. Thanks for having me.
And I do want to pass along a traffic bulletin. We don't normally do these on this program, but this is a pretty significant one. We do have a nine-car crash that has closed the southbound lanes of I-39 near Stevens Point. So if you're on the highway and you're heading in that direction, get off the road and find another way to get there. They hope to have it cleared up by 5:30, but for now the southbound lanes are closed on I-39. And please, if you are on the roads, drive carefully. Scott, what do you think the message was that voters were sending on November 2nd when they gave Republicans control of the governor's mansion and both houses of the state legislature?
Well, I think the message was very clear. People were not happy. They're certainly not happy with the way things were working or not working in Washington and Wisconsin. I mean, Washington and Wisconsin were very similar with regard to the makeup. I mean, the Democratic Party controls everything currently until January, and was certainly true during the election in Washington, and that is the same was true in Wisconsin. And there was a lot, I believe, from what I was hearing, too much spending, not really keeping their eyes in terms of being legislators on the ball, which should have been the economy. And I think people were fed up. They were fed up with business as usual. They were fed up with the fact that we are in serious debt on both the state and federal levels. And they were willing to listen and give Republicans especially sort of a second chance to prove that not only can we get our fiscal house in order for us on the state level, but also keep our promises. So, and people are watching. They are very engaged, more than I've ever seen the electorate being engaged in the process and paying attention than ever before. And I think that's a very good thing. That certainly keeps our feet to the fire. They're going to expect us to do what we said we were going to do. But they were fed up. They were fed up with business as usual and very unhappy with the state of the economy and wanted a change. And that certainly occurred on both levels, in state and federal.
Do you think this was primarily anger over the economy? To what extent was it also reaction against big government and specifically against national health care? A lot of opposition came to the idea of individual mandates.
Sure. Well, I think the national health care debate or lack thereof and the way in which that legislation, some people call it Obamacare, call it what you will, the way in which it took place, I mean, voting on Christmas and you know, doing things behind closed doors, not really giving a lot of transparency to either the process or the product, that occurred certainly, many of us would argue, and I think the public felt very strongly with the state budget process. So I think Obamacare and the national health care plan that passed, I think, was symptomatic But really it boiled down to people were fed up with the way things were occurring. They didn't have a healthy trust of state or federal government in terms of the process, and certainly in terms of the product, whether it was Obamacare or the state budget. They were just sick and tired of, you know, people playing games, whether they were Republicans or Democrats. They didn't want people playing games. They didn't want people giving them false promises, and they certainly didn't want people lying to them. So they wanted someone, they wanted to put people in that said that what they say, they wanted to make sure they're going to do, and they are absolutely paying attention to everyone, just Republicans. In that respect, they're going to keep our feet to the fire.
This was the third wave election in a row, you could argue. There were big changes in 2006, then the Democrats were swept into power in 2008, now the Republicans in 2010. Can we count on the waves having ended? I mean, if there's such a level of anger and frustration in the electorate, could the same thing happen all over again in 2012, and could all of you be out in the snow?
It could, and I've told our members, particularly our new members, look, if we do not do what we said we were going to do, and obviously that's going to involve a lot of tough decisions, the electorate could kick us out as fast as they put us in, and we are very acutely aware of that. But in some respects, to answer your questions, yes, a lot of assembly races and Senate races on the state level have been, I guess, nationalized, if you will. I mean, they are reflective of what is going on or not going on in Washington.
The old cliche was all politics is local, but it seems like all politics is national now.
Well, you know, I think the wave, this wave in particular, I don't think was necessarily a Republican wave. I think it was a conservative wave, but I think people were just as willing to throw out individuals that happened to be Republicans that they didn't feel were doing a good job as well as Democrats. So it wasn't really a Republican wave, and I would argue that, you know, we've been given, as a Republican majority now in both houses, a second chance. But I don't think any of us are under the illusion that there's permanency to this, unless we deliver on what we said we're going to do. If we play games, or if we go back to, you know, accounting gimmicks or other things, and certainly, you know, lack of transparency which had occurred in the past, then the electorate is going to, you know, they're paying attention and they'll throw us out as fast as they put us in. But I think it is an opportunity for our majorities to be consistent. And if we are, I think the electorate will understand and reward us. But yeah, there is obviously going to be an effect from what's happening nationally on the state level, but all politics is still local, and I do think that the electorate gives those that they elect on the state level, they know what's going on, and they pay particular attention to that. They may be frustrated with Washington, but now with basically a split legislature in the Congress.
Well, nationally, there's going to have to be compromise, obviously. Do you feel you've got a compromise now at the state level, now that the Republicans basically run the whole show?
Well,
if you don't compromise, if you don't compromise, do you risk having the same thing happen where the perception was, anyway, that the Democrats weren't reaching out to the Republicans enough on a national level?
Well, and I think many, you know, many people I certainly talked to throughout the election cycle felt that way. We're not certainly going to be forced to compromise because of the makeup of the legislature, I do think it is incumbent upon us to listen and work where we can together. That is one thing I think the former Democratic majorities failed. I mean, we had a jobs package we thought was appropriate. None of those bills in that jobs package actually made it to the assembly floor for a fair vote. I found that very frustrating, considering obviously the economy was on everyone's mind.
Do you think it serves the electorate well when only one party is in control, or is it better off when we have a split governance, a shared governance, if you will?
Well, I think it can work both ways. I think that's really up to the electorate. The electorate isn't so much concerned, I think, about who's in control. They're more concerned about what people do while they're in. And I think the process is going to be a lot smoother for what we plan to do in terms of focusing on jobs and the economy. I don't think they felt the process was particularly smooth with even the Democrats in control of state government. So it is an opportunity for the Republicans to prove that, one, we can govern, and two, that we can govern consistently and fairly. And that will involve a lot of tough decisions. But if we prove that, I do think that the electorate will respond.
Representative Scott Souter, Republican of Abbotsford, he is the new House Majority Leader, Assembly Majority Leader, I should say. 1-800-780-9742. If you've got a question or a comment for Representative Souter about the state of the economy, about the budget, about the negotiations with the state unions, and specifically about something that I want to cover before we move on to the budget, and that's the breaking news today. The high-speed rail project between Milwaukee and Madison canceled in large part because of incoming Governor Walker's opposition to it. Mm-hmm. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood taking the $810 million in federal money and sending it instead to Illinois, California, or Florida. Scott, I'm going to read you a couple of sentences from Governor Doyle and then from the current majority leader, Donna Seidel, and have you respond to them. This is what the governor said this afternoon. This is a quote. He calls it a tragic moment for the state of Wisconsin. Our team worked hard to win a national competition to make us a leader in high-speed passenger rail. We were positioned to be not only a center of the line, but to be a manufacturing center as well. Now we are moving from being the leader to the back of the line. As Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota continue to work on the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative, the connection from Chicago to Minneapolis will avoid Wisconsin. And Milwaukee, Madison, La Crosse, Eau Claire, and other Wisconsin communities will lose the benefit of those connections. Then Donna Seidel, in a news release this afternoon, this also is a quote, a little more than a month ago, voters across Wisconsin adamantly told their elected officials that job creation must be our state's top priority. Unfortunately, she says, rather than listen to those concerns, Governor-elect Walker made the irresponsible decision to reject federal money before he has even taken the oath of office. Governor-elect Walker's politically motivated priorities have already cost our state thousands of jobs at a time when we can least afford it, added hundreds of millions of dollars to our deficit, and signaled a willingness to jeopardize the economic security of thousands of working families in the state. Those are strong words. We'd like your reaction. Essentially, she's saying the governor hasn't even been sworn in yet, and he's already cost the state 5,000 jobs.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I guess if you're talking thousands of jobs that are pipe dreams that are concocted by a survey from the Sierra Club, which isn't exactly the most nonpartisan organization, okay, maybe. I would say that's really a stretch, but I guess I find it fascinating, and I like Representative Seidel, but I'm not sure why a representative from North Central and Central Wisconsin is fighting so hard for a train that goes from Milwaukee to Kenosha to Racine that nobody's going to ride. I mean, maybe there's a bunch of riders in Wausau that just are scrambling to ride a train that really goes nowhere, but I guess...
Well, the train will go from Chicago to Minneapolis. It doesn't go nowhere,
okay.
And there'll be a link through Wisconsin.
Well, this particular one, this KRM line, was only going from Milwaukee to Racine to Kenosha, and anything else beyond that, was I would argue a pipe dream. But I still maintain this is a train to nowhere that no one was going to ride.
There's some criticism of the governor. They say he got a lot of money from road construction people, and this decision wasn't based so much as a rational reading mm-hmm. of what's best for the state. It was payback for his political contributors.
Okay. I would then say let's look back at Governor Doyle's coffers and see how much money he got from the road builders. So, I don't think that is a logical argument. But the fact is, look, this train nobody wanted. Nobody wanted the train. The train whole process was severely flawed. It was negotiated behind closed doors. It was not transparent. This was somehow concocted on several trips that the governor took to Spain. This whole process was, I would argue, tainted and not transparent, done behind closed doors. No one knows how these decisions were made. On top of that, it would cost taxpayers in the future millions upon millions of dollars to subsidize this train, which very, very few people would ride. Meanwhile, we have road projects, bridges, that are in disrepair. We don't have enough money in the transportation fund to fund everything that we do need. And I don't understand why some people are fighting for a train when I would argue we should be fighting for our roads and repair and maintaining our bridges and our current infrastructure. This train was not needed. I still say no one's going to ride it. So, yeah, okay, issue.
I talked to one advocate of this rail line today, and she told me that we ought to be able to see the productivity increase created by rail commuting. In other words, instead of being trapped behind the wheel of a car stuck in traffic, you can actually be working on your laptop, getting work done while you commute.
Okay, but I still, I guess I haven't run into anyone. And I guess I should ask Donna, maybe she was going to ride the train. And I say that with respect, but I haven't run into anyone in my district or anyone up north, whether it was my district or Jerry Petrosky's district or anyone that has said, look, I want to ride this train. We really need this.
Isn't there a difference between talking about what people will do today and what they will do tomorrow as the economy changes and perhaps we end up with high-speed rail linking all of our cities? There was a recent article in Forbes and Kiplinger showing that young people, so-called Generation Y, 37% of them are driving less now than previous generations, and the article said they're switching to bikes and trains. So maybe this would have been an investment in a future economy as opposed to meeting present-day needs.
Maybe. But the fact is we have no money. I mean, that is really the bottom line here. We have no money. It is what you put taxpayer money into terms of future investments. I would argue that people are not suddenly going to stop driving cars. People are not going to stop shipping packages by, utilizing the semi-trucks on the road. In fact, that type of activity is increasing. So the roads are not going away. People are not going to stop driving cars and passenger vehicles. And I would argue that I haven't seen a study yet that shows me there's going to be a flurry of activity now or in the future for high-speed trains. The other fact is taxpayers are going to be subsidizing this thing, or were going to be, and they don't want to. The reason that the advocates of this high-speed rail boondoggle, and I call it that, wouldn't go to public referendum is because they know the public doesn't want it. They didn't feel that they were going to ride it. Maybe a few people, but they know they would lose. And really, it should be up to the taxpayers and to the voters in terms of whether or not what we use our taxpayer resources on. So,
well, the governor-elect certainly campaigned about stopping it.
He did.
So people can't say that they're surprised that it happened because
it
was a campaign promise. Representative Scott Suter, Republican of Abbotsford, he's the new Assembly Majority Leader. We're going to come back with some questions about the state budget and how to address that $3 billion budget shortfall and what the priorities of the new Republican leadership are for the state of Wisconsin. After this break, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
We have Representative Scott Suter with us. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. He is the incoming State Assembly Majority Leader. And let's go to the telephones right now. We have Emily in Baraboo. Emily, you're on Route 51 with Scott Suter.
Hello. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Rebecca Clefish kind of famously said in regards to marriage equality that we're not in a place in the economy where we can afford to be extending special rights to people. And when we're spending a lot of time talking about the economy, there are a lot of tax breaks that are available to married people. So I'm wondering if there are any plans or ideas regarding getting rid of those special benefits that some people do have in an effort to help reduce the deficit.
What special benefits are you talking about? Are you talking about the domestic partner registry?
No, I'm actually specifically referring to Rebecca Clefish said in response to marriage equality for LGBT people. that extending marriage rights to them would be extending them special benefits, which got me thinking, of course, marriage is a special benefit, and it does have related economic benefits as far as tax breaks. Is there any effort to get rid of those tax breaks for currently married people in an effort to have more income for the state?
Scott Suter, address the whole idea of marriage equality, if you could, and the idea of, a domestic partner benefits was passed in 2000, was it 2009, I believe, narrow margins in the state Senate and the House. Are these priorities going to continue with Republican control?
Well, I mean, obviously many of us, including myself, did not support that particular legislation. But right now, to answer the other question in terms of whether we're going to get rid of special tax breaks for married couples, no. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm pretty sure that was a facetious question. But, look, the larger issue, I think, is, what are you folks going to do now that you're in control? And our first priority right now is jobs and the economy. And we want to make sure that we are taking a look at state government. We are going to look at every single program. We're going to look at every single agency. And, we're not going to raise taxes.
Are you going to look at the domestic partner benefits that were signed into law a couple of years ago? And I need a yes or no from you because I've got 3 seconds to news time.
I do think we will take a look at it. I don't know when.
Scott Suter, we're back after the news, 1-800-780-9742. We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with incoming State Assembly Majority Leader Scott Suter, a Republican of Abbotsford. I'm Glenn Moberg. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. And for the next half hour, we are going to be talking about the state budget, that $3 billion shortfall, and the steps that may need to be made in order to make that up. Let's go back to the phones right now. We have Jim in Merrill. Jim, you're on Route 51 with Scott Suter. Hello, Jim.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Mr. Suter, you just mentioned before the break that you're not going to be raising taxes. But with this huge deficit, you're not going to raise taxes. You got to come up with the difference somewhere, so you're going to be cutting programs. My concerns are that there's going to be necessary cuts to all programs. What's going to be happening to education or Badger Care? I am on Badger Care, and we also receive $200 a month in food share assistance. There's no way we could make anything work if there's a cut. What's going through the mind of the legislature?
Well, let me say this. I mean, I think it is important to note that I do not believe Republicans are going to, go in and start slashing entire programs like that. We're going to go after programs that don't make a lot of sense, that taxpayers can't afford. I think we're going to make reasonable reductions in some programs, and I can't say that there's anything out there that isn't on the table. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. This is, look, when you're $3 to $3.3 billion in debt, and we have said we're not raising taxes. I think the electorate was very clear on their intolerance for doing that, and we're making it very clear that we're not going to either. We're going to have to take a look at everything. I don't believe that we're simply going to do away with programs. We can't simply say that Medicaid programs out there are going to go by the wayside. We're not going to do away with the university system like some people have accused us of. However, am I going to say that K through 12 education is going to get an increase? I can't say that. There may be cuts. There may be cuts to the UW system. And, I believe there's going to be cuts to a lot of programs. That what those cuts are going to look like, I can't tell you at this point because obviously we have been handed this major budget deficit, and we are looking at doing what we need to do, whether those are across-the-board cuts, whether that involves a state spending freeze. Everything is on the table.
Jim, do you have a follow-up?
I do, actually. So if everything's on the table, I guess my concern is as the legislature goes through this process, is there any way that we're going to have feedback from the community to say, okay, I understand there's going to be cuts, and there needs to be. There's no doubt about it. But that there's some feedback to the constituency to say, hey, this is unfair or this is fair, or we would like to give you feedback saying we agree or disagree with you.
Yeah, I think it is incumbent upon both on legislators from both houses, as well as the governor, to listen. And look, you know, I think many individuals, Democrats and Republicans in the legislature, do listen and are accessible, and you can call them, and they will meet with you, and you have opportunities to talk with them. There's many of us that do either town hall meetings or listening sessions or both. And we all have toll-free numbers. I tell people call me at home, and some do. I think we are accessible, and I think we do listen. Will we always agree? Maybe not. But those opportunities are there. And look, we're willing to listen. We need ideas, and we're willing to talk to people about their priorities as well. But the bottom line here is also people need to understand, and I think people do, whether they're Democrats or Republicans out there or Greens or what have you, they know we have a very serious problem here fiscally. They also know that our economy is having serious problems. They want us to fix it. And they don't want us to use gimmicks, and they don't want us to push it off into the next budget. They want us to solve it. And they know it is not going to be easy. So, you know, and we know that too. So I can't tell you there's not going to be any pain. We're going to try to do the right thing and do it reasonably, but there is going to be some pain, and I can't make any promises on this program or any other to say that, you know, one program or the other won't be cut. You can't believe how many people are coming into my office right now saying, you know, we actually need more money for this program and $1 million here for this program. And I'm telling everyone there is no money. That is just the bottom line. Not only is there no money, but we're in debt, and so we have to make cuts. I'm trying to make sure that we do those reasonably.
Jim, thanks.
But there is going to be pain.
Jim, thanks so much for the phone call. The idea of cutting Badger Care, is there a concern among your caucus, among your group, Scott, that maybe we shouldn't be making cuts that affect the poorest people and the people who have been hurt worse by this downturn in the economy, that maybe they should be protected to a greater concern than people who are wealthy and better off? Because a cut to the Badger Care program will hurt the poorest among us.
Yeah, and I'm certainly not on your program saying, you know, we're going after Badger Care. I'm simply saying there may be things that occur to Badger Care. Maybe there's enrollment caps. I don't know what that is. I'm a fan of Badger Care. I think most people know that. I have fought for Badger Care. I've even fought against some people who don't like Badger Care. But I also can't tell you that there won't be cuts. I'm not going to sugarcoat this in any way, shape, or form. And I don't control the entire legislature, but I'm telling you that everything's on the table and those discussions are going on. And
you mentioned the UW system.
Yep.
What, if any, cuts do you envision for it?
You know, I don't know. I don't think the UW system will see major increases, and I know that some within the system are asking for that. I think that's...
Well, Kevin Riley has just asked for a 2% pay hike for UW staff. Do you think that one's dead on arrival?
I think that is unwise, and frankly, you know, those who are asking for raises at this point are a little tone deaf, quite frankly, because while people don't have jobs, and people are looking for work, and our economy is struggling, to have people within the UW system saying we're going to give, you know, promise raises when we don't have any money and we're $3.3 billion in debt, I think that is unrealistic. So,
now, as our listeners know, this broadcast is occurring at UW Marathon County, one of the two-year schools. A few years ago, the idea was bandied about closing the two-year schools like UW Marathon County,
right,
or maybe changing their roles, consolidating them with the four-year schools. Do you think that idea will be resurrected?
It might. I can't say it won't. I haven't seen it thus far, but like I said, you know, I think everything is on the table, and there's going to be a lot of discussions in terms of how we solve the $3.3 billion deficit. I can't say that won't be discussed. I haven't heard anything about it yet, but, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm just going to say, look,
and again,
it may come up. It may come up.
The advocates of the two-year schools say that tuition at these schools is substantially lower than the four-year schools, which give lower-income young people a chance at higher education that they might not have at the bigger institutions. But while we're talking about things that we here have a vested interest in, mm-hmm. what, if any, cuts do you envision for state funding for Wisconsin Public Radio?
You know, I we're just early in the process, to be honest, Glenn, and I don't know. That hasn't been brought up to me yet. I wouldn't expect any increases, like I've said. I don't know. We haven't had those discussions, and no one has approached me yet about, you know, cutting or reducing any portion of public radio. But again, like I'm telling everyone and every interest group and everyone that comes to my office, everything is on the table. I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to talk to people. If people want to call me and, you know, talk and say, look, here's why this works, whatever program it happens to be, I'm willing to listen. I would argue that our members are as well, but I can't tell you that there are any sacred cows out there. I simply can't. That's unrealistic considering the massive budget deficit that we have.
1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to talk to the new Assembly Majority Leader, Republican Scott Suter of Abbotsford. That number again is 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are wide open right now. The governor has asked negotiations to stop with the 19 state employee unions, saying that approving the contracts now could hurt efforts to address the state budget problems. And he has also this week brought up the possibility of decertifying unions if he can't get concessions and to possibly change state labor laws. What is the likelihood of that?
I don't know. I think the unions are playing a dangerous game here. I don't understand now suddenly when after the election, the rush after, you know, that the unions delayed for 6 to 9 months. Now there's suddenly a newfound rush to get this done. We saw, you know, obviously a letter that was sent out to union members saying, well, we got to do this now because something else might happen with the new Walker administration and the Republican legislature. So now there's a rush for that would seem to me very politically expedient.
Is this talk about decertifying unions, though? Isn't that union busting?
No. The legislature gave the power to public employees to organize. And it is well within the rights of, you know, the elected members and the governor to decertify. I don't think that Governor Walker, is asking for unreasonable concessions from the unions. He's asking for one more time. Two, a number of us, many of us in the legislature, particularly those who just got elected, the 25 new freshmen in my house, are simply want to see the contracts. I mean, I don't understand how we're expected to vote on something, expected to come in and rush in when you know, first of all, it's disrespectful to the new members who just got elected. They should be able to vote on those contracts. Secondly, those of us who, you know, have been in office, for us not to be able to see the contracts and simply, you know, have to go off of talking points from the union heads and just, you know, that we basically say, trust us, there's nothing in here, nothing to see here.
Well, let me quote one union head and have you react to
sure.
his comments. Marty Beal, the executive director of the Wisconsin State Employees Union, mm-hmm. quote, it's unfortunate that the next governor seems hell-bent on creating a climate of fear, intimidation, and hostility. Those aren't conditions commonly associated with successful economic development. End of quote. Your reaction?
My reaction is that I think the union, while Governor-elect Walker is asking for reasonable concessions, if he's asking for the unions to ask to contribute a little bit, not a significant amount, by way, in comparison with the private sector, a little bit toward retirement, a little bit toward health care, I don't think that's unreasonable. Meanwhile, the unions are out there saying they're ready to go to war with the new governor. Well, okay, how is that not confrontational? And why the rush? Again, it goes back to my original question. Why suddenly the rush? It is for political expediency is to get whatever they can, and I don't know what's in those contracts because I haven't seen them. Meanwhile, there's briefings going on with the Democratic majority, not us, who just basically got elected, and yes, we are taking over the legislature. We are going to be in the majority, but we're not even allowed to look at the contracts. That's fascinating to me. No business in the world works like this.
Well,
and
you know,
no union. No union would say, you know what, just go in and approve these. We'll give them to you when we give them to you. No way. No union member would say, they would say, look, we'll trust you, but it's the old Ronald Reagan adage, trust but verify. I'll meet with them, but there hasn't been one union leader coming into my office saying, hey, let's talk about this. It is a mad rush to get something done that we're not even allowed to take a look at. So that's wrong any way you cut it. And anybody I ask, whether the Democrats or Republicans, they look at me and go, no way. That's not really what's going on.
People who are elected to hold power for their entire terms. And let's face it, those terms aren't up until January 3rd.
That is true. But why the rush suddenly? I don't understand. What we should be doing, if we're going to have an emergency or special session, we should be talking about jobs and the economy, not about union contracts. So,
Scott, let's talk about that when we come back. We're down to our last 10 minutes, and I've got a bunch of things that I want to hit. So 1-800-780-9742, if you'd like to join the conversation. Incoming Assembly Majority Leader Scott Souter with us on this edition of Route 51.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of this station. Thanks very much.
We've also got Scott Souter, state representative from Abbotsford, the new majority leader in the assembly. And we've got your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. Let's go back to the phones. We have Bob in Stevens Point. Hello, Bob.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. With all the discussion on the program about transportation, are there any indications of who the next Secretary of Transportation might be and the particular qualifications that they're looking for?
Scott?
You know, the answer to that is no. They're being very tight-lipped over in the transitional office about all of those appointments. I would personally say I think there are a couple people that would make great transportation secretaries from my perspective, although I'd hate to lose them as members of our team. I think either Mark Gottlieb from our team from Port Washington or Jerry Petruski from obviously our area would make, but that's just my own little 2 cents, and you know they can take it for what it's worth. But no, I really have no idea who they're going to pick. They have said they're going to pick someone who, you know, they're going to pick qualified people. I would argue the two that I just mentioned are very qualified, but again, it's not my decision. So,
Bob, thanks so much for the phone call. What changes would you like to see for the DNR, Scott?
Oh, well, how much time you got, Glenn?
Well, I don't have much time.
We're kind of
in a rapid fire.
I think there's serious reform. I think you're going to see some major changes within the DNR, and it's going to be from almost every single part of the DNR. I've got a list of suggestions I've already sent to the transition team, and I know a lot of people are taking a look at it. The one thing Governor Alec Walker has said is there's going to be major reform in the DNR. I would count on that, and maybe some people that are fans of the DNR won't like it, but the public is demanding it.
Give me a couple of specific suggestions, since you've said you've got a list. Give me two of them.
Sure. I'll give you a list in terms of restructuring the DNR to be more, I guess, small business friendly, so it doesn't take as much time and certainly not as much frustration out there if people want to do the right thing environmentally. I would say that there's going to be staff reductions in certain areas within the DNR. I think there's going to be some reform in terms of combining areas of the DNR in order to save some money. And I would also say that what they're doing with CWD, one of my suggestions is stop wasting money and start looking at the real research. So I think you're going to see some reductions in what the DNR is doing in many programs. And that's simply, my perspective, but I can tell you this, I'm going to hammer away at the DNR until they're reformed. And there's going to be a lot of changes of DNR.
Governor Walker has talked about appointing a deer czar. Now, does that mean putting a person in charge who would overturn the science-based decisions of the wildlife biologists who work at the DNR?
No, I think he's talking about actually using real science instead of political science that the DNR has been using for the past few years. There is real research. There is bona fide science out there with regard to CWD and deer management. But the fact is the DNR can't get it right. Their numbers are off. They can't count in terms of figuring out either the deer or wolf population. So I think whatever you want to call it, a deer czar or someone who's actually in charge, is going to use real science, not political science.
The State Stewardship Fund was renewed with bipartisan support in 2007. Is that also on the chopping block?
I think in terms of looking at the program and finding maybe there might be some reductions in the stewardship fund. Yes, it is, putting it on the chopping block, I don't know if that's accurate, but yeah, absolutely, we're going to take a look at it. There are cost savings that we can find. I believe almost every single program, is on the table. So stewardship is certainly not a sacred cow.
Will there be an effort to ban state, funding of embryonic stem cell research?
I don't know. I don't think that's going to be a budget issue, and if anything, those discussions are going to take place well after we have dealt with it. Our first priority is jobs and the economy. That is something maybe that might be brought up for discussion, but that's not our focus right now. Our focus is jobs and the economy.
Additional restrictions on abortion?
Again, don't know. Some of those issues might be brought up, but I think our real focus, certainly in the State Assembly, is jobs. That's our job day one. We're going to have an emergency session on jobs. We're going to respond to Governor Walker's call for that. We're going to be talking about how to create jobs and how to get our economy moving. The rest, if there's other discussions on issues like that, we might have them, but our focus is right now is on jobs and getting our economy
okay.
Re-energized.
How about changing state tax law, the combined reporting law? Is that going to go away, the so-called, what the Democrats call the Las Vegas loophole?
Yeah. Call it what you will. I would say it's a job-killing tax hike. I think we're going to take a look at it. Whether changes are going to be made in combined reporting is really going to depend on whether we can find monies and cost savings which benefit creating jobs. That's something we will take a look at, whether it's going to be done right away, I don't know, and how many changes, whether the program is going to be revised or revamped, I don't know. Discussions are going to take place, but again, our first priority is there's a lot of taxes that the Democrats created that we would like to repeal. Can't do them all because they're so massive. There were $5 billion in tax increases, but we're certainly going to do what we can to reduce the damage that the Democratic majority did.
And finally, Scott, and I'm sorry we've only got about a minute for this, but
sure.
You spent 7 months in Iraq earlier this year with the Wisconsin Air National Guard.
Right.
What do you think American forces are doing there? Do you think we're succeeding, and how quickly do you think we can bring them home?
Well, I think we have made incredible gains, and we've done a great deal to bring Iraq under control. I know we still have our struggles in Afghanistan, but I can say this. We've made major progress in Iraq, and what we're doing in terms of the surge is slow. In terms of the surge in Afghanistan is slow. But it is working. And I just tell people, look, whatever your view is on those wars, please do not forget the troops that are over there, and especially around Christmas. If people can just send a card or an email or even a care package if they have the ability to do so, I can't tell you how much that means. It is lonely over there. It's hard. It's not easy. But if people can just reach out, and even an email can make a huge difference in terms of morale. So,
Scott Suter,
yeah.
We're out of time. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Glenn.
And thank you for your absolutely open comments over the past hour. And if we don't talk to you before, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
You too, and to your listeners as well.
We want to thank today's guest, incoming Assembly Majority Leader Scott Suter, a Republican from Abbotsford. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer and on-air producer, Rick Ryer, and to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next Thursday, I'll be off. Bill Martins will be hosting Route 51. The subject next week, the sport of curling. And a reminder that our year-end review show takes place Thursday, December 30th. A reminder, you can follow our adventures on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Have a safe and happy holiday season. And until next time, we are heading out of town.